Who are you?
I am Jello Biafra.
Jello Biafra, is it true you once judged a bikini contest in an Elks Lodge?
Where did you hear that one from?
It was like in Colorado, Jello Biafra, an Elks Lodge, bikinis? What are you doing?
I think what I need to do is what they put on the old Nine Inch Nails site, top 10 rumors about Trent Reznor and all. That one I've never heard before.
Have you ever been in any Elks Lodge in Colorado?
I have never been in any Elks Lodge, period, but a good friend of mine I grew up with and the only other Stooges fan in my high school, Sam Turner, his father made his living sharking respectable citizens at cards at the local Elks Club. They tried to figure out ways to expel him or at least get him to cut his hair or even sneak up behind him and cut it off from time to time. No, that never worked. Sam's old man, he took the sheriff, he took the car dealers, he took them all and helped feed his family sharking cards at the Elks Club as his only occupation.
But Jello Biafra, what is the closest you've come to judging a bikini contest? What is the closest you've come to doing something like that? Because you've done the Iron Chef, which we talked about last time, participating in Iron Chef. What's the closest you come to judging a bikini contest? And I won't say, don't say interviewing Nina Hartley nude.
Okay, I won't say interviewing Nina Hartley nude. I think it would only be when one of my beloved girlfriends over a year and I went shopping for new fun underthings and lingerie for her, and then she tried them all on when we got home in order to make me horny. And it wasn't always bikinis either.
I thought she was going to say, or I thought you were going to say, that she made you try them on in the change rooms.
Not yet. I haven't run into one of those, but every major relationship always adds something new and unexpected to the sex life.
Jello Biafra, tonight you mentioned the artist known as Morrissey.
Oh.
You mentioned Morrissey. Now, do you have any advice for Morrissey fans? He's come out and said, stop the seal hunt and ban any Canadian products. Don't buy any Canadian products. What do you think about that? Like, the seal hunt is bad, but should Morrissey say ban everything from Canada? He's not going to tour in Canada, and he's telling people not to buy any Canadian products. How do you solve that?
Well, it's kind of easy for me because I've never bought a Morrissey product. On the other hand, I think it's high time, the normally pretty up there civilized country of Canada that many of us in the States look up to in many ways, get hip to the idea that mass clubbing of seals for pelts and other things maybe should go the way of whaling and the death penalty.
But what about Morrissey saying ban all music from Canada? You're going to be releasing some Canadian rock coming up, the Subhumans. Morrissey's saying don't buy any Canadian Subhumans because Canada does the seal hunt. What do you think about linking those two together? Is that kind of difficult?
I thought you said he was just saying don't buy any Canadian products. Are you linking that to Canadian music as well?
Yes, he's saying don't buy anything from Canada, from what I understand. Don't quote me.
But he didn't specifically say Canadian music.
I don't think he said Canadian music, but I think he meant all Canadian products.
You're putting words in Morrissey's mouth, kind of like you always put them in mine.
Well, there's a lot of other things I could put in his mouth, but I'm not putting any words, no.
Oh, you mean below the belt.
Below the waist.
Ba-boom. Jello Biafra.
Okay, here we go. I think if that ban applied to Canadian music, he'd have to think long and hard about his approach if it included Canadian artists singing songs about stopping the seal slaughter. Kind of like Tipper Gore wanting to ban all mention of suicide in music, even if it was a song telling you not to commit suicide, which Ozzy claims Suicide Solution is.
Jello, you're going to be re-releasing and releasing a new album as well by the Canadian Subhumans. You also have a new band called the Knights of the New Crusade. First off, can you tell me about their stage show and what the lead singer once did with a sword?
The Knights of the New Crusade are the new frontier of fundamentalist Christian garage bands from San Francisco. The first album, which we didn't get to release, had things like My Way is the Highway, E is for Evil, Sympathy for Jesus, Ain't No Monkeys in My Family Tree, and Dangers of Dating. And now the new album, they take on the highfalutin Christian rock scene people who feel that they are being too hard line with their message. And yes, they come out in Life of Brian type outfits, and the singer wields a real sword, which he plunges into the stage for emphasis. And I didn't realize how sharp that thing was until I went to one of their shows, and he was sitting on the edge of the stage with a seriously injured ankle because he missed when he plunged the sword.
What has the reaction been to Alternative Tentacles signing this pro-Christian band? Perhaps, are they the most pro-Christian band in the world right now?
I think they would like to think so. And the singer even was corresponding with a Christian music journalist who told him, oh, actually, it's kind of good you're on a secular label. Maybe then you can convert Jell-O.
Ba-boom!
Yeah.
Or Noam Chomsky.
Oh, there you go.
Jell-O Biafra, I would also like to ask you about the band known as The Dills. Years ago, did you criticize them for doing a Velvet Underground cover?
No, I have never criticized The Dills for that. I eventually criticized them for the way they treated other people in the scene, but no.
Tonight doing this...
Actually, you're thinking of What Goes On, which they did a tremendous job on, actually. I mean, at their peak, when they played a beautiful old synagogue, which was called the Geary Temple, nobody had been in that venue before, and they just blew the roof off of the place, and it was like seeing The Who live as an underground band or something. And then eventually that kind of, you know, sometimes when a band realizes how good they are, it's the beginning of the end, and I guess that kind of happened to them, but you know, they were a great band.
Jell-O Biafra, do you ever get stage invaders while doing spoken word?
Occasionally. Actually, there was one in Fullerton, California, in the bowels of Orange County, when a group of kind of biker, kind of metal-looking guys called Hardcore for Christ were hanging out front, and then some people invited them in, so they came on stage. And they're saying, Jell-O, we love you. We agree with what you said, and in God We Trust Incorporated, but you have to realize that Jesus really is real and really loves you, man. And then one of them even said, I used to be all messed up on drugs, and now I'm all messed up on the Lord, which is a line right off a Cheech and Chong album, but he said it seriously.
Sure,
that whole thing recorded somewhere. It was a 30-minute exchange.
Did they come actually on stage, or was it from the audience? Like, have they come up on stage and hugged you or anything like that?
I think one of them did put his arm around me. They were on stage, yes.
And this has all been documented?
I have an audio recording of it.
Jell-O Biafra, I ask this because I think years ago in the Dead Kennedys, you had quite a few stage invaders. Do you remember wrestling with a girl on stage in New York? Did you wrestle with a lot of women on stage in the Dead Kennedys?
Oh, I think that was Donna Death, who actually is the one who turned me on to that Chicago band you like called the Mentally Ill. She was the one who had the record in her apartment. I don't know what happened to her, though. I hope she's all right. She's also the star of that great underground movie, one of the vanguard of the cinema of transgression film period called They Eat Scum.
It wasn't Richard Kern, was it?
No, it was a contemporary named Nick Zedd.
And what sort of wrestling was done on stage with her? Like, was it a pre-planned thing, or what was going on?
No, she just got on stage and we wrestled, and I wasn't quite sure. She looked just enough like Lydia Lunch. I was wondering if she was, but then when I met her afterwards, I found out that she was Donna Death.
So you are Jell-O Biafra, aren't you?
Apparently you think so. I'll let you harbor that illusion, just like the flight attendant who once asked me if I was Bruce Springsteen.
Now, Jell-O Biafra, I ask you this because check out this little promo for the gig tonight. What it is it's in Dose magazine. It says, Mentos, fresh idea. See this, punk rock legend, Dead Kennedys, Jell-O Biafra. And what do they have in the picture?
A later fake lineup of people who are pimping the Dead Kennedys' name while running off with other people's money. How bizarre. Is that a local magazine here?
That is actually across Canada, but it's just in Vancouver, and it's Mentos Fresh Presents Jell-O Biafra. Do you like Mentos?
I think I ate one of them once. I mean, I love my junk food. I love sugar a little too much, but Mentos just didn't do it for me.
Has there been any confusion like this before where you do a spoken word and they put the picture of the wrong band in there? I know this has happened before because I remember the band from New Zealand called the Datsuns played in Vancouver and used a picture of the Montreal band, the Datsuns. And actually, in that documentary, Punk, that I think you're actually quoted in by Don Letts.
Yeah.
There's a picture of the band the Teen Idols, but they just searched the internet and they had the picture of the 1990s Teen Idols instead of the...
Don, you should have known better than that. Could have done a little fact-checking, my man. I mean, Letts is a really intelligent guy. I'm surprised he let that one slip in there. No, I've never had this, but what really annoys me with the fake Dead Kennedy shows and why I feel it's kind of a deliberate con job on their part in many areas is many, many of the shows they do have an old picture of the band with me in it. In the ads and in the flyers and all that. And then East Bay Ray Incorporated always says, oh, well, that's just because promoters pulled the wrong photo off the internet. But they, for a long time, they had the same agent as the fake Misfits. And you never see Danzig's picture in Misfits things booked by the same people, so who also booked Great White, too. I think it's just another... another area where they remind me more and more of the Bush administration. I mean, I'm really proud of Dead Kennedys and the music, but I really regret ever trusting them and don't recommend anybody else trust them either.
Winding up here, Jello Biafra, Merle Haggard. Are you still into Merle Haggard? I've never really gotten into Merle Haggard. What's so great about Merle Haggard?
Oh, because Merle's a great country songwriter, and at one point he had some very interesting songs that were embraced by the right wing, although he in the 60s and 70s, although I'm not sure he quite intended them that way. But then in more recent years, after Anti, that branch of the Epitaph Empire of all people, signed Merle Haggard, and he began giving these interviews where he attacked the drug war, he attacked NAFTA, he attacked all kinds of inequality and things that he saw as a, you know, somebody who grew up poor and had sympathies with working Americans, which was always his vision and his shtick. At the same time, he even said that I had more rights in the early 60s when I was in prison than the average American has today. And coming from somebody like Merle Haggard, I think that's very interesting.
Jello Biafra, I was also curious about photo ops. I'm fascinated when you tell stories about Bush landing on the aircraft carrier and the aircraft carrier actually being in San Diego, or him holding a fake chicken. Is this true? Can you explain this quickly, just a bit about those two photo ops or any others you might know about?
Well, the people who stage manage the media relations of the Bush administration are probably have learned gleaned all their tactics from Joseph Goebbels and the Nazis and honed them to a fine point where Bush meets leaders in, I think it was either Jordan or Israel, and they had to build a special bridge across a pond just because they thought the leaders would look better if they were photographed that way. Bush's infamous Mission Accomplished speech took place not in the Middle East, where a lot of people thought it was, but on an aircraft carrier off the coast of San Diego that steamed around in circles for 23 hours until Bush's handlers decided the lighting was just right. Stuff like that. They always stage manage things like that. They're very good at it.
And him delivering a big chicken, it was a plastic chicken to the troops?
Well, that was when he paid a surprise visit to Iraq, and there it is on the evening news, a grinning Bush bringing a great big Thanksgiving turkey to the troops in Iraq. And not only does he not really support the troops when he keeps cutting veterans' benefits and everything, but the turkey wasn't even real. It was a shiny turkey made out of rubber.
You know, here, I'm supporting the troops. See me in the photo op, but you can't have any because it's not even a real turkey. Gotcha again.
Where did you find that particular fact out? Was it up on eBay for auction afterwards, the chicken or turkey?
Oh, I wish. No, I first saw it in a Michael Moore writing, but it's been discussed by several other journalists and publications since.
Jello Biafra, lastly, I was wondering about the version of rock known as Oi. Are you a fan of Oi, like bands like Cockspar? What do you think of Cockspar? What do you think of Oi?
I love that Chip on My Shoulder single from way back when. I mean, as far as I can tell, they were a pre-punk glam band. Some of their stuff was more boogie rock, like Status Quo, like Sunday Stripper, their song Sunday Stripper back in the day. And then the Oi people embraced them later. basically. And I first heard of Oi not as a grassroots term, but a term coined by Gary Bushell, a writer for Sounds Magazine, who was writing all kinds of things attacking crass and attacking discharge and offering up the exploited, and then what he called a movement and labeled Oi afterwards, which I think in the end, I mean, it became kind of the Oi, Oi, Oi sound, which, you know, Rancid has swiped those kind of chants and used a lot in their stuff, and many others have. So it is a sound, and whether it was not, whether it was ever really a movement, I think is questionable. It was more like a look and a sound. And some of the bands were more prepared to be shoved into the spotlight than others, and some of the bands were just playing better than others. I mean, the Infrariot album is really, really good, but they were really young, and I guess they didn't last very long, and who knows, maybe the being shoved into the British media blender got to him or something, like destroyed the X-ray specs. Who knows? So very, very mixed feelings. I mean, you know, I think some people play the music really well. And one time I saw the Dropkick Murphys, and it seemed like they were better at it than any of the bands back in the day. You know, they just kind of gleaned what they took from them, just slicking it up, and they had it down.
Jello Biafra, tonight there was a guy with a cell phone, and the whole routine he did with him almost looked pre-planned and pre-planted, but it was like this totally spontaneous. How do you deal with people, perhaps, that might be disruptive to your show and turn it to your advantage? Somebody told me if something goes wrong, get naked.
I've only done that at 4 shows way back when I didn't wear strong enough pants and people tore it off me. You know, I actually performed nude opening for The Clash at the only Bill Graham show Dead Kennedys ever played. And from what I was told, Graham had to be physically restrained from coming on stage to beat the crap out of me. He was so angry, and he was known for doing that to people, too.
How nude were you, though? Like, totally nude for how many songs?
Well, no, my belt still survived, and I think my belt, my shoes, my Argyle socks, and shredded parts of my underwear. Last time I ever wore underwear at a live music show, because people pulled on it from 2 different directions and almost cut my nuts off.
Well, Jello Biafra, anything else you want to add to the people out there at all?
I can't even remember what your original question was before.
It was about Oi. It was just about Oi music. And it was about dealing with hecklers in the audience. The reason I brought that up again is because, not to equate you to comedian Neil Hamburger or anything like that, but one time he was at the Big Day Out Festival in Australia, and he had to say he had cancer to calm down the audience. I guess I was wondering any hints for people when they're doing spoken word or anything like that in dealing with the audience.
Well, knowing people who've suffered from cancer, I don't really recommend pulling that on anybody. But if anybody could get away with it, Neil Hamburger could. But I thought his whole purpose was to make the audience as mad as possible, though. Annoy people even more than you do on a daily basis.
It was about 20,000 people, though, so I guess it was getting a bit out of hand. I guess even Neil Hamburger has limits.
Yeah, I had fun with that once. I introduced Ice-T at the first Lollapalooza in San Francisco. It was 1992. People were a little too high on Bill Clinton because they knew Daddy Bush was going to go down. So I went out and told the audience all the reasons I hated Bill Clinton and didn't trust him and predicted he'd just be a corporate right-wing corrupt jackass that he turned out to be. And I had 20,000 plus people booing me. It was a uniquely wonderful adrenaline rush. Then Ice-T came out, and eventually, after some hip-hop stuff, debuted Body Count and debuted the song Cop Killer. And I never thought I'd see the day when 20,000 straight white concert goers in their white t-shirts and their shorts were all chanting fuck the police at once. That was pretty cool. And that was over a year before the LAPD went after Ice-T for Cop Killer. They just sat on it and waited until they needed a target to detract attention from something horrible that they had done, namely causing the Rodney King riots.
Lastly here, Jello Biafra, are you going to be doing any more tours, i.e. like Spitfire tours? Because it was like Professor Griff, you were on it, Lydia Lunch. You did something with David Cross, the punk voter. What do you think about those tours where the audience is all mixed up, especially like the David Cross punk voter tour?
I wouldn't mind trying more of those. Spitfire was a great thing where you'd have 3 or 4 different speakers, sometimes even a right-winger and all, like Kennedy, the MTV creature, getting up and saying the worst thing that ever happened to minorities in America was taxes. taxes and why we should privatize Social Security. And then I could get up and tell a whole auditorium at a university, privatization my ass, the first words out of my mouth, and got these huge cheers. But more to the point, it reacquainted me with Michael Franti, who often hosted Spitfire and crossed paths with everybody from, crossed paths with everybody from Jill Sobule to Andy Dick to one of the founders of PETA to the Indigo Girls, all kinds of people crisscrossed on there. It was cool.
And I think it's a direct result of that. You ended up like on the Jon Stewart show, or wasn't the Jon Stewart show? You were on a show with Jon Stewart. I remember him razzing you a little bit.
That was completely different. That was politically incorrect.
Have you thought about going on a Jon Stewart show? Have you been approached to go on that? And do you remember him kind of razz? I remember him going, come on, Jallo. What do you think about Jon Stewart? Was he just joking there?
He might have been serious because I didn't do very well on Politically Incorrect. I woke up real sick that day, and to compensate like an idiot, I drank coffee right before I went on the air, and it went straight to my nerves, and I clammed up when I should have been talking, and Stewart was trying to bring me to life, and I think he was actually trying to help at that point, because I just didn't do what people at the show and even myself were expecting me to do, because there was also an anti-abortion lunatic on there as well, and I didn't really do to him what I should have done to him and whatnot. So, Stewart has never asked me on his show, and Bill Maher has never asked me back on any of his things, maybe because it was just I didn't quite do as good a job as I could have done. Although the interesting thing about meeting Jon Stewart was he came up to me the dressing room beforehand, and I didn't even know who he was. I'd never seen his show or anything. He said, oh, yeah, I saw Dead Kennedys at City Gardens in Trenton once. I was the bartender.
Interesting.
Yeah, how weird a connection is that? Now I've seen The Daily Show, and I think he's absolutely brilliant, and I'm really thankful you can still get away with pulling stunts like that on television.
You've never been on Fox News, have you? Because they'd probably have you on, wouldn't they?
I don't think it's worth it to go on Fox News. One thing I try to say, and Bill O'Reilly just says, shut up, get that guy off the air. What's the point?
That'd be great TV.
For you, not for me.
Okay. Well, thanks so much, Jello Biafra. Why should people care about Jello Biafra?
Maybe you could answer that question better than I could. Okay, you tell me. Why should people care about Jello Biafra?
Because doo 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 doo.
Quack, quack.